My guest on the Give First podcast today is Emma Bates of DM. It's a social search company that is doing great, has raised $3.7 million to date, defying some of the odds, raising money as a female-founded company. We're going to hear how Emma did it, fundraising tactics and strategies for women, as well as learn about why some of the search tools in the market today don't do a good job for women. That's coming up now on Give First. Hi, everyone. This is David Cohen, and I'm here with my amazing co-host,
Brad Feld.
Hey, Brad. And this is the Give First podcast. And in the startup world, Give First means simply trying to help anyone, especially entrepreneurs, without any expectation of getting anything back. So we'll be talking to mentors and founders about what Give First looks like in action and how it makes great entrepreneurship possible.
We polled everyone, and they said consistently that their favorite part of the show was the legal mumbo jumbo. So here it is. The following discussion is an expression of personal opinion and does not represent the opinion of Techstars or any company we discuss. Our conversations for informational purposes only, including any mention of securities or funds. This is not legal, business, investment, or tax advice, and is not intended for use by any investor. Certain of Techstars funds own or may own in the future securities in some of the companies discussed in this podcast. Got it?
Emma, excited to have you on the Give First podcast today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I want to give people a little context. You went through Techstars, I think, in 2020, but talk about you sort of before Techstars, a little bit about your career and just leading up to that moment and deciding to build a new company.
Yeah, of course. So my background is almost sits entirely within go-to-market, partnerships, marketing. I'm completely obsessed with all things consumer psychology and everything that goes into influencing someone's purchasing decision or choice that they might make online. Became interested in it actually pretty early on in my career while I was still at university. I was studying war studies at King's College and basically needed a creative outlet and created a blog while I was at school. And that grew to hundreds of thousands of readers. This was like 12 years ago, so very early, I guess, internet influencer days. And from that, basically learned how to build an audience, learned about brand partnerships, all of those sorts of things. And upon graduating, quickly decided that career path was not something I wanted to go down, but I was super interested in doing this type of work for other people. So I joined a consumer tech company called Whaler. They're now one of the largest creator networks in the world. I think I was their third hire, fourth hire, something like that. I then was approached by the co-founders of Away, and I joined Away when there were 10 people and did all sorts of things within the marketing realm there, from like international, like crazy hotel pop-ups through to partnerships with leading brands and celebrities. And it was an insane 3 years, but it was actually there while I was at Away that I had to take the morning off to pill for the first time. And that sparked the idea for DM.
And DM, I think, is sort of a play on DM, like what you do with your friends, right? And so What is DM? It started around 2020, I guess, and you went through the Techstars program in New York. Tell us what DM's all about.
Yeah, so DM, the inspiration behind it, as I just mentioned, really came after I had to take this morning after pill. And before I was about to take it, I entered into one of those classic internet doom spirals, trying to figure out what was going to happen. And I just like couldn't find anyone's story when I was searching. And it just felt so at odds to the real world search experience that I know exists amongst like female communities, amongst my group chats. And I was like, why can't I find anyone's story? I know millions of people have taken this thing. Like, surely there's a way that we can like index this better. And so the vision really started there. And myself and my co-founder Divya came together to explore what that could look like. We were asking questions like, why isn't search community ranked? If millions of people are searching the same thing at the same time, like, why don't we bump into each other? And we sort of quickly recognized a couple of things. One being that community insights are crucial to trust and validation, and communities are also shortcuts to the right information. So all that goes to say, DM is a new kind of search engine. It is one where you can discover perspectives as well as facts. We call it a social search engine. For an analogy for those out there, if this makes it easier, think Reddit meets Perplexity AI, but for female-centric content. And our vision in the future is really to build sort of the front door to what we call girl internet, which is what our users describe us as.
Do you think that the current search tools on the internet, I mean, obviously, you know, Google or you know, social networks, whether that's on X or Instagram, whatever, do you think they're biased in some way that don't really bring the right types of conversations, the right type of results to women? Is that part of the problem?
Yeah, a big part of the problem is, I mean, the tool itself. So when you use Google, a lot of the time you don't get perspectives, like you don't get community answers. And that is like, so 95% of women state dissatisfaction with search results. And a big piece of their dissatisfaction comes from their lack of access to community stories. And a big part of the lack of access to community stories is there's not many of them online. Like Reddit is, I think, 75% male in terms of their active user base. A lot of these conversations happen over dinner tables in private group chats. They're not searchable. They're not indexed in a way that is useful when you're using something like Google. I think like the tools themselves just like don't combine the facts with the perspectives. But then on the other side of things, there is a vast gender data gap. And so the actual data itself that is searchable doesn't exist. And that data does exist within human experiences that we share with each other. And so being able to piece these all together in one sort of like very seamless product is kind of the goal.
So you talked about the morning after pill as an example. I don't know if there are other sort of canonical examples that in the community, but help someone understand who's listening the difference between what they might discover on DM versus on, you know, another way of searching, like real world example.
Yeah. So one of our most popular searches is around navigating friendship dynamics. So an example of that could be like, how do I deal with a friend breakup? And if you were to Google that, you might get a few blog posts from media outlets, but you wouldn't find much else. In DM, if you were to ask the question, like, how do I break up with a friend or how do I cope with a friend breakup? You would get DMAI's summary. DMAI is trained off of women's conversations that have existed in the DM platform. You would then get community sources as your search results. So you could dive into previous conversations, view other people's responses to historical conversations on that same topic. And that could be great. And you're like, cool, I've got my answer now. Or if you're like, I still want more, you can choose to socialize your search and post it to a feed and more people can weigh in live. And so you get that added piece of validation on top of your initial result.
Let's talk about the accelerator program in New York just briefly. What was that experience like in 2020 in New York City? I know Jenny Fielding was involved in the program, but you know, tell us more broadly, sort of why do Techstars and what do you feel like you got out of it?
Yeah, so Techstars, huge fan of Jenny. She was actually our first ever check in DM via Techstars, and we still talk very, very frequently. I think that is one of the biggest things that I still value from the experience is just how much of a believer and helper Jenny has been in company trajectory. I think also like both myself and my co-founder had never started a company before. And this was like in the midst of the pandemic, no one was in person. We were like, why are we starting a company now? Not quite sure.
And why not?
Nothing else to do. And so yeah, we really took a lot from the Techstars, the foundation of the course and everything that you learn from it because of the fact that we'd never started a company before. We learned how to fundraise. We learned like the fundamentals of all the things that we needed to know. And it was a really good sort of like launching pad to what we wanted to go on to create.
Awesome. So 4 years into that journey, and tell us a bit about where you are today as a company and how things are going.
Yeah, so we just closed our best quarter ever. We grew 300% month over month from a user base perspective. And we are really, really excited about the rest of the year now that we have so many people that are trying to use DM and what that means from a database perspective and what that means for what we can go on to create for them. In terms of, I guess, like where else we're at from a fundraising standpoint, we've raised just around 3.7 million. And we have built out an amazing team with that. And we're really just like so excited for this year.
Well, congrats. That's awesome. And it's been fun to sort of watch the progress. And I don't know, you know, hopefully this podcast will show up as a resource for people, because what I want to talk about is something for women is, you know, you defied the odds. You know, most women really struggle to raise venture capital or seed capital. 3.7 million is a significant raise. I think something like 2% of venture capital is going to women. And so, you know, I imagine there's people listening that would like to understand more about how you accomplished that. So maybe you could talk a bit about the story of raising that capital and maybe some of the takeaways or lessons that others could you know, benefit from.
Yeah, I will be the first to say that it was definitely not easy. I think that a lot of the media stories that you see around people fundraising is like, oh, we started conversations and 6 days later we had $10 million. And that just like, I've never known that to happen to a female founder. I'm sure it's happened to many male founders. Certainly none of the female founders in my network has that happened to. So I think in the earliest days of raising money for DM, when you're raising money where the company itself is tailored to a female audience and you as a team are majority female, you're kind of in a little bit of a difficult spot in, I guess, the data points in how you might successfully raise are not in your favor. But a few things that were really crucial to us being successful at fundraising were actually a lot of the things that we learned during our time at Techstars. So things like understanding the power of FOMO and how to sort of cultivate FOMO around your round, whether that be back channels, whether that be constant updates of what's going on in the process of meeting with an investor, all of those sorts of things. And like really using every piece of news that your company has to your advantage to push a raise forward. Also learning how to structure a conversation with an investor. So like even on your first call, never leave the call without knowing what their sticking points are, knowing what their process is, knowing what their check size is. Because if you don't know any of those things, you can't use any of those pieces of information to your advantage to like push the raise forward. So a question I always ask towards the end of a conversation is literally like, what would it take for you to invest in DM? What are your sticking points? And they usually always tell you. So you at that point know what it is that you can help to like unstick for them in the course of the next week or two. So yeah, I would say those are the two things, understanding that it's FOMO drives a lot of things, and also understanding like the information is your superpower, and to you to let on pieces of information at crucial points in the raise is really important. And basically, like all of that goes to say that fundraising is a game. So like learn to love the game.
Yeah, I saw an Inc. article where it was talking about, you know, you treated it like a game. And I like to say that in my fundraising talk, that there is a strategy to it. There is a game to it. And people use different approaches to do it. But, you know, one of the games you're playing is to try to get oversubscribed, for example, right? To not have the ask be more than you end up raising, because that doesn't end well, both economically. Yeah. Sometimes it just doesn't happen. But I want to jump into, I scribbled some notes about what you were talking about. First, let's talk about that FOMO, the fear of missing out. I know a lot of investors will say, oh, I have JOMO, the joy of missing out. They don't want to be in the hot deal, but it's not really true, right? We know that. And I see it too when we raise capital for our funds and things like that. So I do think one of the challenges of FOMO that maybe is a little bit misunderstood is that people try to generate it sometimes too early or before it's at all real. And so, you know, the flip side of that problem is you say, we're closing next week, you better get in now, and then you don't close next week. So how do you sort of make it real for people versus just a threat that is empty?
I think that it goes back to that sort of point around information is your, there's a lot of like really your only power in a raise. Like when you give pieces of information about your business, when you give updates, if you don't have a fundraising update, give a company update. Like be like, we just closed this partner and our ARR is now X dollars or whatever, or we've just launched this cool thing, like check out this new feature. And so I think that it's like less like obviously wanting to make sure that the momentum is still going, but like from a fundraise perspective, so they think that you're still in active conversations. But like if your company is doing really, really well, other investors are going to be interested in you. So it's like don't just use the fundraise as the update, but rather like pieces of information about your business. Like maybe you're like, hey, we just pulled together this FAQs doc for like other funds, hit sharing it with you as you consider the business. Like there's so many things that you can do to like tease out information. Think of it as a marketer, like a marketing funnel. Like you're trying to get someone from top to bottom as quickly as possible. What are the different things they need to see to social proof the deal? And insert that as much as you can, as frequently as you can.
Yeah, I think I've seen it backfire, but what you're talking about is just using positive information in a drumbeat. When I've seen it backfire, it's because there really wasn't anything going on and it was positioning.
Yeah.
And the worst kind of marketing is when it's just not authentic and it's just totally positioning, right? And people can see through that. But when you have good news and you have a rhythm, I think sharing it in that way is really smart. You know, it's a classic now, but Mark Suster used to talk about, you know, investors invest in lines, not dots, right? Mm-hmm. They need to see, you know, a steady progress towards improvement and getting somewhere. And I think when you show them that every week, it can really add up over time. Did you ever save a story or two? Like, you know, we got three customers this week, but I'm only going to tell you about one in case I need it next week.
Things yes, like, I do that the whole time.
I give away all your secrets, but I love that.
You can't give everything away.
No, it's not a trademark. We didn't talk about it ahead of time. I've seen people do that really successfully. And I actually coach that to where, you know, like you don't have to give all the good news the minute it happens, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, giving a little bad news is good too because it builds trust, right, in my experience. So you talked about sticking points. I love that. One of the questions I always get encourage people to ask at the end is on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you to invest? Mm-hmm. But you're taking it one step further, which is, you know, what specifically are you stuck on? Do you find that sometimes people don't give you the truth, or they give you homework when you ask that question, or are they pretty straightforward with you?
80% of the time, they're pretty straightforward. You can kind of, you can even tell with the sticking points whether the likelihood of them converting as well. Like some of this, if they're bringing up sticking points around like monetization, for example, and you're a consumer internet company, then like the chances of them like getting over that hurdle before you have more proof points around monetization is like, they're probably just not a consumer internet investor. Like that's just not what they know. It's not what they're comfortable with. And so it also then is like, okay, well, that's how much effort I'm going to put into like following up consistently until you give me a yes or a no based off of what I assess your like sticking point is. So it kind of helps, like if you were to look at like a partnerships pipeline and you're like 10%, 70%, whatever it is to conversion, you can use sticking points to try and help you with that. Sometimes you might be wrong. So it's always good to like obviously keep the conversation going as much as you can. But yeah, I think I would say if they're lying about the sticking points, they're like very good liars, and the sticking points they bring up would be quite valid. So I think they're usually truthful.
I like asking it that way because where I find, you know, investors like to buy time, right? And it's, you know, time is comfort and safety, and, you know, you have fear. And so you want more time, right? You want to know that you're doing something smart and you get more information tomorrow. So you try to wait. And, you know, I think when you ask it like that, you know, what are the sticking points? It's different than saying, you know, what else do you need to know? Because when you say, what else do you need to know, right? It's like, well, I'd like to see your customer list and your roadmap and talk to your CTO, and it goes on forever, right? But you're like, what specifically are you stuck on to move forward? And then you sort of work towards solving that, or, you know, because it's probably a legitimate concern in most cases, I would imagine.
Yeah.
With your business, what was it that consumer, like, you know, how are you going to attract so many people to this sort of question?
It's more, I guess because we have like now our traction and like product-led growth kind of solves for that customer acquisition question that we had in previous rounds. And now it's very much like, well, when are you going to monetize? And I'm like, well, we did actually just sign our first B2B partner as a consumer social company that is like very early in a company history to do so. So like there are things that I've tried to like actively set up for like company success prior to the raise, so that we do start to de-risk some of those like questions that we know most consumer internet companies get, which is around monetization. And then obviously like retention and whatnot, that our metrics on that front are certainly best in class for the most part. So I can let them speak for themselves.
Always helps, right? When the business is actually doing well, and it's not just the story.
I'm not having to like make it up.
That's right. Always helpful. Look, there's been a lot of research. I'm sure you've run into it on some level. Susan Cohen, no relation to me, great researcher, you know, talked about how in venture capital processes, women tend to get questions about the downside and men tend to get questions about the opportunity and the upside. That's just from studying a lot of conversations that happened in pitch meetings. Did you face that? Do you feel like people were sort of more focused on, well, what could go wrong? And how did you deal with that?
Constantly, like still hasn't ended. What I try and do, which I think it's kind of annoying because it eats into your time that you have with an investor. And I would say I probably get like, I think they're called like preventative questions or something. I can't remember what her phrasing was, but I would say I'd get those types of questions maybe 60 to 70% of the time. Yeah. And a big thing that I've had to learn to do as a founder, which actually Jenny gave really good advice on this, like very early on, is like reposition the question. So if they're asking, oh, well, like, what's your cost of acquisition? And like, how are you going to ever scale if your cost of acquisition is X? Then you're just like reposition the question and be like, oh, so you're interested in how we're going to grow beyond our current stage. Here's our current marketing plan. Or like you just sort of, that's not fully repositioning, but like try as hard as you can to like get them onto a path that is not like a black hole of like cost of acquisition, for example. And yeah, so as a lot of the time it's like actively repositioning and like re-asking them the question before answering yourself. And I learned that the hard way. I didn't realize I was answering those types of questions very early on in fundraising. And now I'm like, okay, I've heard it, I'm repositioning it, and then I'm answering it.
Yeah. And I think everyone gets them. Women tend to get them a lot more based on what I've read about. And I think, yeah, the trick is that is for what she talked about in the article is sort of like, how do I answer it in the light of something that's more exciting, more positive, more up and to the right. So customer acquisition maybe is like, it's going down. You could be defensive around it, be like, yeah, it's going down, but that's what they're worried about. But the real thing is like, how do we show them how exciting the opportunity is?
Yeah.
Independent of that acquisition cost, for example. Right. So
yeah.
Awesome. And, you know, I'll toss this one in there and we'll edit it out if you have no great answer or don't want to share, but you know, people always ask me this question. What's the craziest thing that happened to you, you know, raising the money? What's the most biased, obvious thing that occurred to you? Anything like that, that you would be willing to share?
Oh my God. Yes. So many.
You're like, let me count the number.
Like, let me count how many rude people I've spoken to. My worst to date was during our last fundraise where a man showed up not only 12 minutes late, but then spoke for the majority of the call about himself. As I tried to introduce myself and DM, he cut me off like maybe midway through my first sentence about DM and was like, I don't care about that. Let's talk about the numbers. And I was like, well, the metrics are related to the business. So if you don't know what the business is, why do you care about the metrics? And as I was literally presenting from like Amplitude, like I was reading like very legit, I wasn't like making these numbers up. And he was like, so you're telling me that your company is stickier than Facebook? And I was like, no, like, I'm like, I mean, if our numbers are better than Facebook in our very small beta community, then yes, but like, no. And then he basically started shouting at me about how I was lying about our metrics. And I was like, how am I lying about this dashboard? Like I truly could not be. And so I then was like, okay, you're not getting this. I think this is a waste of both of our times. Thanks for the 15 minutes. I don't think this is going to be a fit. And then he started panicking and he goes, wait, can I introduce you to my friend, whatever her name was? She loves investing in female founders. And I was like, oh, don't you? And then hung up.
Well, that's a definitive end. So I'm imagining that relationship didn't really continue. But
I didn't ever email him ever again.
Part of it, right, is cut your losses. And, you know, I think a big part of the numbers game that we all hear about, you got to talk to a lot of investors, is focusing your energy on the ones that get it and understand and are leaning in versus the ones that are wasting your time.
Yeah. I got someone significantly more powerful than him to email his boss about how he'd behaved. So I don't know if he still has a job.
We'll leave that person unnamed, I imagine. Yeah. But you know, as you know, TechStars has a nice little database of all these interactions and it's shared between all the alumni and founders. So there's always a way to look that up in the community and share it. The communities are great, aren't they?
They're so good.
Well, Emma, thanks so much. Great talking to you. Great catching up. And congrats on all the success with DM. It's super exciting. I know people are listening are going to go try it out, but hopefully they also get a little benefit from understanding your journey and sort of what you learned along the way. And we'll continue to watch and see what else you learn as you go.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It was great to chat with you.
Thanks a lot for listening to the show today. We'd love to hear your feedback, ideas, or who you'd like to hear next on Give First. And please leave a rating and review, ideally a good one, and reach out anytime to podcasts@techstars.com or on Twitter. I'm @David Cohen. See you next time. Don't forget, Give First.